Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Justin.
As you can see, I am upside down because we're talking about Stranger Things, Season 5.
Right. I get it now.
Oh, now I'm back on the right side up. All right, this is going to be full spoilers. I hope I didn't blow out my mic on that intro. We will see in post, sorry. But yeah, Stranger Things Season 5, full spoilers ahead. So, what'd you think?
I'm disappointed. Not gonna lie.
Alright. Stranger Things Season 5 pads out an already overextended plot into a plotting final season, which, flaws aside, at least ends well.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
So, from here, let's go into our medium shot, and what was your expectation level coming into this?
Well, I first watched Stranger Things like immediately when it came out, before it was popular, and I really liked it. And as the seasons went on, my enjoyment of it decreased further and further each season. Maybe the, what are we on, the fifth season? So yeah. Maybe the fourth season kind of picked a little bit back up, but I don't know. I wasn't expecting that much out of season 5. I was just hoping it would end okay and not be terrible.
So my journey with Stranger Things began, I want to say, just before season 3 came out. I managed to avoid the first season at the zenith of its popularity. I think I jumped in when the second season had just finished, or around the time of it was around between season 2 and 3, somewhere in there. And I really, really liked the first season. It was never like my favorite thing ever, but I really liked it. And season 2, I liked a bit less. Season 3 took, I don't want to say a nosedive, but it was definitely the least creatively inspired up to that point. Still pretty fun. Season 4 was a hard bounce back for me. It's arguably my favorite one, but I also haven't seen the first one in many, many years, so it might be more recency bias talking, but 1 and 4 are neck and neck for my favorites. And then season 5, probably my least favorite one, but for very different reasons than season 3.
Yeah, I think I got biased towards the first season just because of the way it is. Like, it's so heavily
self-contained.
Well, it's what it was going for, right? Like, everything, like, it's very much the Spielberg feel.
Amblin Entertainment on Netflix.
Yeah, it's not, that's what the first season was like, and then it went somewhere else. So, I don't know, I really enjoyed that vibe in the first season.
Yep.
Not saying that going forward is pretty hard to maintain that, especially when they're just kind of trying to.
And I think that's why I'm coming from a different point of view on this, because you actually had to wait between season 1 and 2, whereas I basically watched season 1 and 2 back to back. So the tonal change is less whiplash for me. And then, like, the longest wait I had to have was between season 3 and 4, and then between 4 and 5, and I felt those more in line with everybody else. I was on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
But for those first two seasons, I was, you know, probably experiencing it a bit differently. Just because I got to see it all together as one package. But yeah, season 5, takes way too long. Is the main issue.
Well, the problem is that they bloated the cast over the course of 4 seasons. They bloated the cast, continued to bloat it in season 5 to the point where everybody needs some screen time, and it's just way too much. Like, there were multiple episodes where main characters weren't even present. They didn't even exist in the story. You didn't see them for a whole episode because they had to cover every other side character, and this season still bloated the cast. Not that I'm, like, I don't want to say, like, I didn't enjoy the new additions. I actually did like some of the new additions.
See, this is the backhanded compliment I have to give Stranger Things, is that I've never seen a show so successfully bring in new cast members year after year and make them just as household names as the original.
That's true.
Like, yeah. I don't remember who, like, season two, they had Bob. Everyone really liked Sean Astin as Bob. Mm-hmm. Season three, you had Max as well in season two. Season three, you had Robin was the big one. Season four, we brought in the villain. We had Vecna. Who else came in season four? Eddie Munson, Chrissy.
Yep.
Huge. They both blew up the internet. Season five, we have Holly and Derek. People really like them too. Me included. Like, Stranger Things, and this is why it's a backhanded compliment, because I really have to hand it to the Duffers for creating such likable characters year after year. Most shows adding new cast members is a sign of things getting stale, and they're usually very grating characters. But they managed in even their weakest seasons to create people that their audience loves to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the cast kept bloating. They yes. weren't killing anybody else off to make way for the new people. It just got bigger and bigger.
Yes, it got so big that
you,
it's a little out of control.
Like, everybody's your favorite on this show, but nobody gets screen time.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. Everybody's competing for screen time because you introduced too many characters.
Yes. And in your final season, this was a good chance to start thinning the herd. I think it would have felt impactful if, over the course of season five, you had started killing some people off before the ending. Like, I believe it was the end of part one where they found Kali in the upside down secret lab, and they thought it was going to be Vecna in there. But I like that scene where Elle and Hopper were, he was telling her to leave, and she just saw that he was strapped with bombs, about to sacrifice himself in there. And I thought that would have been a perfectly fine ending. If he'd blown himself up in there for some noble sacrifice, I'm like, oh wow, that's like halfway through the season, end of part one, great cliffhanger. Nope, he didn't die. Mike and Nancy's parents, they get mauled to death by a Demogorgon. Oops, except they're not dead actually, and didn't really get anything to do for the rest of the season. I'm like, okay, I actually felt for that. And then it had the rug pulled out from under me, and it felt like my emotions are manipulated there because they didn't die. Jonathan and Nancy, they shoot the orb and get stuck in a room that's filling up, and oops, okay, we're having our emotional heart-to-hearts, you're sucking me in, and nope, they're still fine. Okay, so I just lent you my emotions, and I'm feeling toyed with still. Even Elle's sacrifice at the end is still, like,
up in the air.
They won't even commit to that.
Yeah.
She's the only main cast member to die this season, and you're still not confirming it. There were just so many opportunities where people probably should have bit the dust here, and
so much plot armor.
So much plot armor. I'm not saying I needed, like, just the core four or five kids at the end to make it.
No.
But, like, or they should have killed Max last season too, probably.
Well, that's what I mean, is they did. It was almost like they were too afraid to pull it off. Like, if you think about it, they've only done, I guess they did a major death three times, but, like, they did Bob, they did Max's brother, and they did
Eddie.
But, like, there were so many opportunities that it actually made the monsters not feel that powerful or intimidating, especially coming into this season where it's like, yes. I mean, it's cool that Mom fought off the Demogorgon with the wine bottle, but at the same time, if they pulled that in the first season, there's no way. Everybody who came across the Demogorgon just died.
Yes.
And there was only one of them. Now we're talking like a whole bunch of different things. Like, everybody used to just die.
And that was part of the reason characters like Nancy and Steve grew to become badasses, because these were like scared, shallow teenagers in season one. And like, when Steve picks up the baseball bat and goes into defensive mode, when Nancy gets really proficient with a shotgun, like, cool, that's character development. These were scared teenagers at first, and now they're fighting back.
Mm.
And now that feels less special at this point, where we've seen so many people fight back. And like, now it's nearly comical that, like, Nancy with a shotgun and Steve with a baseball bat and like a mom with a wine glass are more effective than the military riddling these things with bullets.
Yeah. It's almost becoming a self-parody at this point.
Nearly.
Like.
Yeah. Like, it was cool at first, but
That's why I think it ran its course. The fourth season should have been the end.
I think they should have finished with a 3 or 4 hour movie, and it would have been like basically do the finale they did, and then like condense the rest into maybe 2 hours, thin the cast crazy.
They could have easily condensed this season into a final movie and
a long movie.
Drop a lot of what they did in the small build up to get to it. If they changed the way they built it up,
yeah,
and presented the final episode similar, they could get to that final episode a lot quicker. There would be ways to do it.
Yes.
And they could have done one movie to finish it off. It's obvious that that was the idea they had, and they were trying to figure out how to get there.
I am very much convinced that the Duffers worked backwards with this season. They had their finale in mind. They knew where they wanted to go. And everything else this season was, okay, well, how do we connect the dots from season 4 to this finale?
Mm-hmm.
Except we're working backwards, not forwards. Because they knew their endpoint. They weren't getting to an organic end of a story. They were
forcing it.
Yes, this is how we want to end it, and we have to get here in 7 episodes. And that's why those 7 episodes, they really had no idea how to fill it.
Yeah.
Because every single episode is basically the same thing.
It just feels like filler. All the characters are running around. Basically, the plot of the first 6 episodes can be defined as everybody trying to find cell service.
Yes.
We can't call each other.
Hopper and Elle were in the Upside Down trying to find the lab. Everyone else was trying to find Hopper and Elle. Holly was captured by a Demogorgon and stuck in the Upside Down, and everyone wants to find her too. And
nothing, it was literally just everybody trying to find each other and just keep moving around. Oh, we're in the Upside Down now. Oh, we're not in the Upside Down anymore. Okay. Like nobody... nobody could get in contact, and that was the entirety. It was literally like a game of broken telephone.
And it was frustrating, because I think it had a cool start. I really liked the first episode where we're picking up in Hawkins after a while, after their big calamity. It's basically under military rule at this point. There's curfews, you can't go out on the streets, and our main crew is doing runs into the Upside Down to try to find Vecna under the military's nose. They have, like, Murray smuggling goods in for them. They have like this rogue network basically going on. And I thought that was a cool start.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't really go anywhere. Cause the first, I forget what they call them, crawls. The first crawl they went on
immediately went wrong.
I
think that's where, once the crawl went off the rails was where, and like,
because the consequences of that carried on for 7 more hours.
Well, yeah, and it seemed like it was going to be really dangerous. Like Hopper was like, "Uh-oh, I'm in here with the monsters, and this was not part of the plan. I'm by myself."
Yep.
All right, this is cool. And then, how long did everybody fart around in the Upside Down? And there, nobody was worried about anything in the Upside Down.
No, because they revealed that all the monsters came from another planet.
Well, they did, yeah, they revealed that eventually.
But that's another big problem I have, is that they're still doing big lore drops this season. Season 5 of a show is when you should be wrapping up loose ends, not creating entire new plot lines.
That's borderline a twist, basically.
Yeah, we already kind of knew who Vecna was, and he was basically the leader of the Hive Mind alongside the Mind Flayer, which I guess we figured out they're like symbiotic kind of co-leads in the finale. But if you got to that earlier, we know Vecna is basically in charge here. He's got the Hive Mind. He's trying to invade Earth, whatever. You didn't have to add this whole other planet. The Upside Down is this in-between world, like in a dimension that's held together by like a space orb ball. Nobody knows where it came from. Dustin said it's a scientific thing on front of Hawkins' lab. I'm like, I don't know who built that. Or why? There's still so many questions about what actually, and like, what were the tunnel system for? Like, he wanted Will there as his eyes and ears and built the tunnels in his sleep. And I guess the tunnels are how the Demogorgon got to Russia in season 3. But like, why did Vecna need all that tunnel system if he was just going to crash his planet on top of planet Earth anyway through the Upside Down as a medium? I'm like, all this stuff is like, I don't know how the Duffers thought. I don't think they thought this far ahead. They couldn't tie everything together in a way that made sense, but they're still making new stuff.
I think they were grasping at straws. I think they were like, oh yeah, the Upside Down is, you know...
It's just a mirror copy.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you That's know what? How does it work in D&D? Oh yeah, it's like... the Upside Down, or I'm pretty sure that equates to the Underdark now.
Yeah.
And then below the Underdark is the Abyss.
Which is what they call it.
So essentially, yeah, they called it exactly D&D logic. I'm like, well, I guess that's what they did, is they're like, more D&D stuff. We need more D&D stuff. That'll solve our problem. We'll figure it out.
Yep.
And they were like, yeah, let's just force some more stuff in, see if that'll help. Instead of just, you know, resolving it.
Yep. And I also struggled with the tone of this season because, and earlier on I said that season 3 was my least favorite before this season. And the reason I still give season 3 props is because it was fun. We had the, Scoops Ahoy gang, and like Robin and Steve had great banter, and like the mall was a vibe, and, you know, the Russians were like, okay, like every 80s thing has evil Russians, okay. Like, it was a change up in tone, but it was still fun to watch. I could rewatch season 3. Season 5 is nonstop melodrama and depression for 9 hours.
Yeah.
I think that's most evidenced by the, like, L. And I don't know whether to throw Millie Bobby Brown under the bus for this or the writing, but a character like Eleven was basically sad or angry the entire season. I don't think she showed any more emotion than sad or angry.
I'm going to say that was the writing.
Probably.
They tried to write her like a hormonal teenager, basically.
Yeah. I feel bad.
But at the same time, we're trying to push across the point that, oh, she's an adult now, but she was acting like a kid.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they were trying to do there, actually, because there's...
I mean, I can understand
both out there.
I can understand that, because isn't that what being a teenager is? You think you know best and you act like you're mature, but all the adults looking at you can see you're acting immature.
See, I would agree with that. If that wasn't the conclusion at the end was, oh, I'm an adult, I'm right. And yes, Hopper's like, yes, I should be trusting you because you are an adult and I should trust your actions. That was the final note of that story.
I think that was a large thematic component of the whole season in general, was the parents not really trusting their kids to be independent. Because like Will and Joyce had a very similar thing dynamic as well, where she's constantly being overprotective of him and he's like, just let me do the thing, Mom.
But I think that parent son relationship there was done better.
Yeah.
I think that one was done better. That one made sense to me. But with Hopper and Eleven, she didn't present herself as actually being mature. She presented herself as what you said, where she thinks she's mature enough to make decisions, but she's not. But the end result was that Hopper was basically like, yes, I should be trusting you because you are mature, but she's not acting mature. So to me, there's a conflict between what's being said and what's being presented.
I see what you're getting at. Yeah. But I did like, going back to Joyce and Will, I agree that they were done better, because Will's whole thing is he's basically the scared kid who
He's the baby of the group.
Yeah, he's the baby of the group who's never gotten to prove himself, and everyone underestimates him for 5 years.
He's also been totally underused since the first season.
And I think one thing you can boil it down to say is that he's kind of the perpetual victim. He was the kid who got kidnapped in season 1, and he's basically been the victim of the group ever since. Always needing saving, never standing up for himself, and internalizing it in a way where he feels useless, and everyone makes him feel useless, especially his mom, who's so overprotective. Like, Jonathan can go out and fight monsters all day long, but Will can't leave the radio tower. And that makes him feel like garbage, because he's like, I'm going off to college soon and asserting my independence here, and my mom won't let me do anything. She's still babying me.
Well, and I think that like, that's another element of why I feel like it was so well done. I'm kind of piecing it together as I'm going now. I'm like, yeah. Well, of course she's overprotective. She literally lost her child in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And had to fight like hell to get him back. Like, yeah. Of course she's going to cling to him now, never let him go.
Yep.
And it's kind of like the extended, okay, this has been drawn out a long time, Mom.
I appreciate what they did with Will here, because I think this is the first time since season one where he's actually gotten something memorable to do.
Mm-hmm.
Where his connection with Vecna was a linchpin in the plan, and wow, he has like 11 powers now, and he can kill Demogorgons and fight Vecna from inside Vecna's mind. That stuff was cool. I like seeing Will be useful.
Now, the part I didn't like is that they doubled back on him. They went, okay, he's got this, and then they went, let's retract that and say that, oh, he's got insecurities that make it so he's not powerful. I'm like, okay, all you did was you took two steps forward and then took one step back with him.
And this is a complex web to unravel here. But my problem with that is I don't mind the fact that his insecurities are holding him back. But the way they handled it was basically just to force his coming out scene.
Yes.
Which had no dramatic tension, because I didn't doubt for a second anyone in this room would have a problem with it. That's my problem with this. It's not that he's gay. It's not that he came out. It's that nobody in the room's going to have a problem with it. So what are we doing?
And there were characters in the room who've never spoken one word to this guy.
Exactly.
And the other thing was that they were like, okay, we're on a really tight time right now. We gotta go. And it's like, okay, hang on. This is important. And you're like, okay, we're going to slow this down to a crawl. I read somewhere that somebody timed it out. Now, I don't know if this is a fact, but mm-hmm. it seemed to be pretty accurate to me, is that the whole coming out scene was longer than the final fight.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Like, I think it's a decent scene for the character. I understand from his character arc, he thinks this is something he needs to do to build up his own self-confidence. But as a viewer of drama TV, once again, I just didn't like it, because why are we doing scenes if there's no tension? Like, because I never thought anyone would actually have a problem with it, it's a non-issue. It's like, why are we including this if there's not going to be an issue to resolve? Like, if most of the group was fine, but there's like one homophobe in the group, which I know you don't want to do at this point, because it's like character assassination at the nth hour, unless you were going to kill them off or something. But I'm like, I understand what you're trying to do, but it falls flat for me because there's no conflict there. And as a writer, you have to have conflict for every storyline to matter. So it just felt like it didn't matter in the end.
Yeah, like we even knew that. A lot of people already knew.
They pegged that in like season two.
A lot of people in that scene were kind of like, oh, you're just figuring this out now?
I mean, Mike was blindsided, which is hilarious.
I don't believe that.
No?
I don't think so. No.
I thought one of the saddest scenes in this season was when Robin was talking about how, oh, you know, one of the first girls I liked, I just kind of flirted with her a little bit, tested the waters, and then Will tries to, like, you know, get a little aggressive with Mike one time in kind of a flirty way. He, like, punches him in the shoulder really hard or something, which is very obviously him trying to flirt from, like, a meta perspective. But Mike's just like, ow, why? And he just kind of walks away.
I'm not going to lie, I didn't pick up on that one either.
But Robin was watching. Robin was watching that scene, and she knew what Will was trying to do there.
Mm.
And she could see how just dejected he was, that Mike was just like, what the hell? Like, that was him testing the waters for flirting. It was very subtle, and that was a very well-done scene to me.
I did not catch that whatsoever.
Yeah.
My problem with the coming out scene is that they did this already successfully with one character. Well?
Yep.
They did it well already with Robin.
Yep.
They already did that storyline. They already did it successfully. And somehow this one is just done so poorly, and I don't know. It's just not...
Well, once again, the problem is lack of tension.
Yeah.
Like Steve, when Robin was very scared to reveal her sexuality because nobody else really suspected, and Steve thought that there was a romantic thing between them. So her revealing that, like, it was both a risk and it was going to hurt Steve, and you didn't know how he was going to react to both her being gay or not being interested in him. And, like, there was more ways it could have gone wrong. So even though he accepted it perfectly fine, the fact that it could have gone wrong made it more interesting. Know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There was never a chance Will's coming out was going to go wrong. Like going into it or as it was happening, I never got that impression at any point. And that was, it's not that the fact that it happened, it's just everything surrounding it just made it not feel worthwhile in the grand scheme.
Yeah. It just, and they spent so much time on it this season that it's like,
yeah.
Okay. Especially when the whole season, like when the whole season's already feeling bloated and
yeah,
I don't know. I just, there were better things they could have done with Will's character. They already played into this earlier. We as the audience already knew this.
Yeah.
So why did we need to go through more long hints about it? And I don't know. I just felt like this. Like, maybe I'm critiquing this scene too hard, but it's more of an overall critique on the whole season, because
it's a microcosm of we've been going on about it for a while, but it is a microcosm of a lot of the problems.
Well, yeah, it's an easy one for me to pull examples to prove the point, but the point runs across the whole season. The whole season was plotting and like wasting time.
It's melodramatic without enough setup or payoff to care.
Yeah. It just felt like filler. That's it. Like,
I think another problem for me was that, you know, I don't normally like to criticize actors, but I've had a problem for a while with Noah Schnapp as Will. I think he was best served in small doses.
He was best... His best acting was as the kid who was missing all season.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, he's serviceable. He can do it, but like, it might be a Millie Bobby Brown scenario where his writing was a little bit on the rougher side, even though he had one of the more complete arcs this year. But I just... His actor... Like, Noah Schnapp is... His facial acting is good, but his delivery is just very wooden for me.
Yeah.
And I just don't connect with him.
I think that's the thing, is when it comes to bad writing, a really good actor can save it. If you're kind of a mid actor, you're not going to save bad writing. And I do think that the writing is not excellent for every character. I do think there's a lot of characters who are written differently. It's almost like, I don't know how the writing structure was done, but some characters are written really well, and others, it's like if you had a single writer and it's like, okay, this writer understands this character. This writer really understands how to write Nancy.
Yep.
But doesn't really understand the character of Will. Doesn't really get it.
Like, I think this season, the standouts were just all the Wheelers.
Yeah.
Just like Nancy, what's her, Mike, Holly, the mom, even, like, all the Wheelers are just really well done this year.
They somehow took Mike, the most unliked character in the show. He was fine in the first season, but he continued to be this jerk of a child. That he was the most unliked character in the entire show since season two, basically.
He got redeemed this year.
He somehow got redeemed. He came out looking really good. Good character. Like, I was blown away by that. I'm like, oh, here goes Mike again. And then I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, okay. He's not being a dink.
And look, because I was giving some throwing some shade at one of the actors before. I will say Finn Wolfhard's been one of the most consistent actors on this show. He's always been fairly good, even though his character is a real jerk. And I think there's a reason Finn Wolfhard is one of the most successful out of this cast. I've seen him in the most stuff outside of Stranger Things, besides like David Harbour and Millie Bobby Brown. Like, there's a couple of breakouts and he was one of them. Yeah, I really liked Holly. I think she was my favorite part of this season because she's one of the only characters who is going through a very dangerous situation this entire time and has the charisma to carry most of her scenes. And I think she outacted most of the people on this season.
Probably. Maybe not Steve.
No, Joe Keery just makes everything look effortless.
Yeah, I think he's probably one of the best actors on the show.
Oh yeah, easily.
But yeah, she for her age, she's doing absolutely incredible for acting.
Looking forward to seeing where she goes next. And same with Derek.
I love that. He's great.
Yeah, he's really good too. Just the new, like I said before, the new characters they brought in this season managed to make you like them, even if you as a critic are like, but why are we focusing
new
on
characters? But I like the new characters. That's the problem.
Yeah. And I don't think they're planning a spinoff with them, but I did really like the ending where they, you know, they're at the D&D table and they take over as Mike finishes his campaign up. And you're like, okay, the world moves on.
Now, I had to Google it to see. Some people disagree that his campaign lasted for 6 years, but I like to believe that they had a 6-year long campaign.
They were using the same characters, I believe.
That's what I mean, is they use the same characters. To me, I'm like, I think they played a 6-year long campaign. For their entire childhood, they played one D&D campaign, and now Mike's setting it aside. To me, the setting aside of the books after doing a 6-year long campaign, to me, feels like a better ending.
I also feel like, when did they have time to end the old one? Like, yeah. Will got kidnapped in season one, so that was kind of kaput. They did play in season two and three. They had time for that. But, like, season four was just straight drama. And then they've been under military occupation, and Max has been in a coma. Like, when were they playing and doing all these crawls? Like, when were they playing D&D between season four and five?
Yeah.
In season one, right? Like, they really only were playing at the start of season one, season two and three, and then after season five wrapped up. Like, yeah, so I can believe it was a 6-year campaign with all the delays. I mean, our D&D groups only played 70 sessions and it'd taken us nearly 4 years.
Yeah.
Delays happen.
It's not unbelievable, and we played pretty consistently. So their one campaign lasting 6 years is not unbelievable.
We've gone months at a time without playing. We're in a dry spell right now. But, yeah. So, I want to talk about the technical aspects a little bit, just to break it up. Because I think the show was technically very well made. The writing is my biggest problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of cinematography and production design choices, except for the Abyss planet, I didn't care for it. You know, that seemed kind of bland.
Boring and uninspired, yeah.
Boring and uninspired, but I really liked Henry's house. Was really cool. What other ones did I like? Max's cave was... There was a lot of interesting stuff in there. The collections from her travels. The Hawkins lab is always really cool, like with the dripping, like with the melting.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was really cool.
Multiple different rooms in there. There was Brenner's lab. There was the rooftop seat. Like, there were quite a few production design elements I liked. The camera work was really cool in some scenes. I liked the one in particular was the one in the graveyard where Dustin's getting beaten up by the bullies and the camera's just kind of spinning around and tracking it. I think that was a oneer. That was really cool. Music was tense. Sound effects were also affecting and scary. especially on my new surround sound setup. I'm like, ooh, scary stuff happening behind me.
Well, and the one that I always like is the flickering of the lights. They always,
yes.
They always try their best to, whenever it's going to be an element, they really plan out where the lights are going to be in the room, in the shot, which makes it kind of interesting, because even in one shot, you can see them where things are going on, which lights are flickering, where's things going on that we don't see.
Yes, it draws your eye very well.
And I always thought that that was a really big strength to the show, was that choice of where the diegetic lights are being placed.
Yes, you know something's happening.
Mm.
The special effects also generally fairly good on this show. I do think some of the backgrounds ended up looking green screeny, but the creature effects, the texturing and the comp work, very immersive. Like, it's like if it's happening on camera or in the same levels as the other characters, it looks good. If it's the background, eh.
Yeah, like, a really standout scene that I thought looked really good for CGI was when they all fought the Demogorgon together in the house, when they kind of did the Home Alone thing. And
yes.
That one was done really well.
That was the a details good sequence.
That was really, really good. When it comes to, you know, 10 Demogorgons popping up being shot by military soldiers, yeah, they kind of look like rubber chickens.
A little bit, but it didn't take me out as hard as...
that's why it was... For me, I forgive those ones because it's fast. It's really fast. It's, you know, there's a lot going on that you're like, okay, I'm not really having the time. Where when you're watching, when you know all your characters are in the house and it's a slow, the Demogorgon's pacing around, like, there's long shots on it. They better look good. And they do that. They pull that off. It does look good.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the action sequences landed as well. They maintain their attention and entertain me.
I really thought that they did a good job with the Mind Flayer presenting its scale.
Yes. It's one of those funny things where I didn't see it coming, that the tentacles and like Vecna's lair was the Mind Flayer. That was a cool reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it feels like it should have been obvious in hindsight.
And it was like the pulsing heart behind him the whole time.
Yeah, like, what is that?
I really liked that all this time we're like, okay, there's like tubes coming down, connecting in his lair, and they're connecting to the people. And then it's like, oh, wait. He's also one of the people. He's just getting the tubes connected to. Oh.
You see, I think the reason that twist worked very well is because we've only ever seen the Mind Flayer as a shadow monster.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nearly like I never fathomed the Mind Flayer being a tactile flesh and blood creature.
Yeah, I almost thought he was just a shadow. Like when the stuff comes out of their mouth or whatever, when they're disconnected, like the shadow stuff. To me, that's what I thought the Mind Flayer was going to be, is just comprised of this shadowy, gooey stuff.
Which is why the reveal was in plain sight, and I never questioned it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, that actually makes a lot of sense. But you misdirected me, because I've only seen this as shadow. What else is going on in this season? I think most of the characters had decent arcs. A lot of them not fully explored. But I do appreciate that everyone was... The Duffers couldn't tie everything together, but I think they tried with this cast being as expansive as it was. I understood why everyone was there and what they were all trying to do. They all had goals. Not all of them paid off, but I'm like, you all have something you're working towards that's not the main goal.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just like, I'm trying to remember what some of them are right now, just as a weird example. Like, I don't know, like Dustin had his thing about trying to maintain Eddie's memory. And Steve, I feel like Steve was dealing with a bit of loneliness this season because Dustin was pulling away from him and everyone else was really busy. And like Robin had her girlfriend she was dealing with and everyone just kind of ignored Steve this season. And it was kind of subtle, but he was just kind of the like looking after everybody else and trying to keep,
well,
keep
if you
things
think about
together.
The happiest he seemed was when they were like, yeah, Steve, we need you to help us beat a Demogorgon in the house. Yes, I'm ready for this.
Like, yeah, he was kind of the glue keeping everybody together. He was the only one who was like actually on task this season. And Nancy too. Okay, now I remember. Oh, he was trying to like flirt with Nancy the whole time.
I don't think so. I think they were, it didn't really seem like he was.
He claimed he wasn't.
To me, I didn't really see it. To me, I more saw that they were pushing the audience from Jonathan's perspective to make it feel like, to feel Jonathan's insecurities about his relationship with Nancy. I think that was the point, and they were using Steve to push that. But I don't think that was the case, because in most instances that you can remember, there's usually a reason.
That's an interesting point.
Like the biggest one that I'm sure most people would remember is when they want to split up in Hawkins lab in the under in, right?
Yep.
Well, he was right. He said, can I go with Nancy? Cause I don't want to be with Dustin. Look what happened. They went downstairs and then they got in a big fight together and almost like ruined everything.
Broke the antenna. Couldn't contact them to say, don't shoot the orb.
Yeah. And then Jonathan and Nancy got into their spat too. So switching the groups actually might have been a good idea. He had a good point.
Yep, but Jonathan wouldn't.
He could already tell the stress in their relationship. He could already see it to me. And he was having his own problems with Dustin. So that scene to me was like, okay, that's one of the most obvious attempts that it would look like from Jonathan's perspective that he's trying to make a move on Nancy or trying to push him out. But to me, I felt like that was just the perspective they were pushing by trying to tell Jonathan's story.
That's an interesting perspective, and I enjoy that. So the last thing I really have to mention here is the military plotline. Linda Hamilton was just wasted this season.
They barely used her.
I feel like they really wanted someone like Brenner back, where it's like, okay, Brenner was a villain who we knew up to this point, but you didn't want to revive him a third time?
They should have just revived him a third time.
Because now you stick Linda Hamilton in there as this generic military badass who I don't know and never came to care about and never did anything. She just kind of aura farmed while everybody else made moves around her and was like, we gotta find Elle. And then never helped. Or her guys were incompetent.
No, they should have just brought Brenner back for no good reasons. Just have a back or like some weird upside down version of him or something. Just
can you imagine that scenario though? If you had Brenner here instead of Dr. K, it would have been a lot more impactful, even if the same plot played out.
Well, what if you had like an upside down version of Brenner or some sort of upside down magic, which would explain why the base had to be in the upside down? Okay, maybe this version of Brenner, the upside down stuff is keeping him alive.
Sure.
I don't know. Bring him back one more time because
he was the series villain.
You needed his character in there, but you just made a replacement because he was dead. And
yeah,
that you're already shooting when you know that your plot requires a specific character that you already killed off. You can't just replace them with some generic person who's supposed to fill in for that role. Every time that's done, it's never pulled off successfully. You need to find a way to use a different character. You can't just shoehorn somebody in to try to fill in that role. You need to switch it up entirely then. Because it doesn't work. And I don't think I've ever seen that work.
No, really not. I think another controversial thing for me this season that I haven't seen too many people talk about, I don't know how this show got away with showing our main crew just like straight up murdering so many US military members. I'm like, That never happens. If you want to kill Russians in an 80s thing, that's fine. But like, oh, we're just killing U.S. military now.
No, that happens. Yeah. It's 80s movies.
Not U.S. military, though. Mm-hmm. Americans are always... Like, they kill mercenaries. They kill work-for-hire guys.
It depends.
They kill ex-army guys who are trying to fight you, but they don't kill, like, active serving members of the military. I don't think I've seen
that.
To me,
this seemed like an off-branch of military in a way, because, like, it didn't really seem like they were an official military project. Like, or it seemed more like a rogue project to me. So, I don't know, but... I don't think it's super uncommon to, like, I can't think of any examples right now, but I feel like I've seen it, like, 80s movies where, because military is bad. That is a core theme in a lot of 80s movies.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's rare for me to see it. Military is bad, but it's usually foreign military's bad. American military, hoorah.
I guess so, it depends.
Same thing with cops. It's very rare. They didn't kill cops this season, but it's very rare for, like, good guys to kill cops on home soil.
I guess the reasoning would be is that in the 80s, I don't think you would get your movie funded if you were to say, oh yeah, we're gonna show that the American military is bad.
The only movie I think I've ever seen pull it off successfully was the first Rambo First Blood, where... Okay, you have the cop that he's fighting, and, like, cops do die in that movie, but you've also got this mentally ill ex-military Green Beret who the cops are trying to capture as well because they think he's a bad seed because he's from Vietnam. Like, that was military versus cops on home soil, and that was very effective. And that's, like, the only time I've ever seen that. And Rambo didn't even mean to kill the cop in that movie. He didn't do it. Like, the guy, he fell, but they blamed him for it. And yeah, there was, like, a shootout in the streets, but, like, that was very rare. Rambo First Blood was kind of the exception. And every Rambo movie after that, he was on foreign soil. He was in Vietnam for two of the movies. He was in Afghanistan for the third one. He went to Mexico for the fifth one.
Fair.
That was kind of a one-and-done deal. We're fighting on American soil.
I think we're getting a little off track here.
Yeah.
But
my point is, it was, yeah, different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Perhaps controversial. Maybe not as controversial as I expected. Yeah, so in summation...
Are you nothing else?
Actually, we didn't talk about the finale a heck of a lot, because I quite liked it.
Mm.
Wrapped up basically everything I wanted to see happen, specifically in the last hour. By the time we get to killing the Mind Flayer and all that, I'm like, yeah, it's cool action, but I'm ready for this to wrap up.
Yeah.
But then the last hour is the epilogue part, where I think I'd recommend watching that even if you gave up on Stranger Things before. I'd say...
Well, it kind of is the wrap up to everybody's story.
Yeah.
Which we see a scene like that play out for their D&D characters. It is an essential piece to kind of wrap everything up and tell the end of the story.
They have their high school graduation. Like, I was emotionally moved by it. It was a good hour at the end there. And I was surprised that it happened because I was watching it. I'm like, how is there still an hour to go? What the heck?
That's right. You text and you're like, yep, there's still an hour left. I'm like, he's getting to the epilogues.
And when you said that, I'm like, oh, I probably got like 20 minutes of action left and then epilogue.
No, it's just a straight hour of epilogue.
No, yeah. I just went straight. But I was quite satisfied with how all that wrapped up.
Yeah.
And before we give our rankings, L, dead or alive?
My theory is that she's dead and Will is just, not Will, Mike is just trying to find his way to cope with things because he's sitting there and poking a plot hole in the story. Like, literally, he's doing what the internet does and pokes plot holes. But there's plot holes in his theory, too. And there's other plot holes in places that...
I'm going to say dead as well because yeah. I think it reflects very badly on Elle's character that What's she going to do after this? The only people she knows and likes are in Hawkins.
Yeah, that's right. She's just going to screw off and...
Yeah, she's just going to make them all, first of all, not just screw off, but make them think she's dead.
Believe she's dead, yeah.
And then leave?
No, I don't really see that as being something her character would do.
I just don't
buy it. Once again, the point was to be that she was, she's mature enough to make her own decision. To me, that's a very childish action.
It's either character assassination or Mike's coping mechanism.
Yeah. That's it. That's why I'm like, I'm going to choose to... And it also would defeat the point of Hopper's speech with Mike.
Yeah.
Completely defeats it. And to me, the way he's described the two roads, this is Mike's way of coping with it and moving on. To me,
yeah.
is him sitting there and saying, you know what, in my head, I'm going to choose to accept and move on with my life. I'm going to choose to accept that
she's fine.
She might be out there and she's doing whatever.
Yep.
And there's nothing in there that says that Mike wants to go find her or that he wants to pursue anything, because probably he still deep down believes that she's not out there.
But that's how he
wants to.
Yeah.
So he leaves it at that. That's his ending to say, hey, maybe there is a chance.
Mm-hmm. I can.
But to me, that's him choosing. That was, to me, was his representation of choosing the road that Hopper wanted him to take.
Yeah. I did like that speech quite a lot at the end where Hopper's like, I had done this.
Yeah.
So. I've spent way too long obsessing over what I could have done different or just move on.
Mm-hmm.
You can wallow in it or you can just move on. And you never forget it, but you find a way around it. So, final ranking.
Oh, boy. I haven't thought about this. You go first.
Okay. I wrestled with it for a while because on a technical level, I do think it is a very well done show. But this season was so padded out and so repetitive. The actors really carried every scene. Like, and the thing is, I did enjoy this show on a scene by scene basis. To me, the real charm of Stranger Things is just watching these actors interact with each other. And that's the reason, though, even if you could argue the show should have ended in season one with a self-contained story, I wouldn't trade most of the last decade watching these actors bounce off each other. It's been very good entertainment on TV, and it's made me very emotionally invested. But this last season, I think, is best enjoyed if you put on in the background. But even if you gave up on Stranger Things a while ago, I do think the finale is worth a watch. So I'm cheating and giving it two rankings. The season as a whole, put on in the background, just the end, worth a watch.
I'm going to cheat as well. I'm going to put the season at mid-tier garbage. But as a whole package, season 1 to 5... I will say that it is good. I do think it's rewatchable to an extent.
I think I'd give the series as a whole pretty darn good.
It's hard to say that an entire show is rewatchable.
But it's fun.
But it is, I think to an extent, it is rewatchable. Is it rewatchable where I'm going to sit there and focus on every minute? No. It's like a mid-tier garbage rewatchable, but I'm going to say it's good at the same time because there is quite a bit of good in there.
I think it's a lot more good than bad.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Out of 5 seasons, I think there were only 2 I'd consider abnormally weak. Season 3 and 5 are the only ones I would put in mid-tier garbage territory. Probably. The rest I would have given at least a thumbs up and said pretty darn good. The first season's probably a must-see.
I'm still giving season 5 the mid-tier, though. It's just...
There hasn't been a single season that I gave my lowest rating of Don't Bother.
I'll tell you right now, my girlfriend wants to watch this show. She hasn't seen any of it yet.
Sure.
And I said, you know what? Yes, I will rewatch it with you. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, yeah, I would enjoy rewatching the first season. I'll probably enjoy rewatching the second season.
The third, you'll probably kind of step in and out.
The third, I'm going to be bored out of my mind. The fourth season, I'm going to be like, okay, yeah, I like the fourth season. I don't mind me rewatching that one. And the fifth one, I'm going to be zoned out again till the last episode.
We talked about the fourth season with Ryan a couple years ago. And like, he and I were pretty blown away by a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Just the way all the mysteries, everyone was separated for so long, and the way it all coalesced into that mind-blowing twist of like, oh, number one was Vecna, and Vecna was the owner of the house that they were investigating. Like, everything was just, it paid off so amazingly well at the end of season four that it was just like, wow, that was very well done. And season five was just disappointing in comparison.
I still think it's worth it just for that final episode.
The final episode is like, if you want to go to season four and then basically just get your Cliff Notes version and watch the finale.
That's probably the way I would recommend it.
Yeah.
For people who haven't seen it yet and really don't care to see it. Yeah. Read the summary of
season five and then watch the last episode.
They're just going to describe what's going on. Not much has changed. Max is back and Holly's kidnapped.
Yeah. And then you just see what the payoff is.
And then you see the payoff. All they need is the setup that was given to us in the first episode. Just what actually happened to get Hawkins the way it is now. So that was all backstory stuff that was just exposition dumped on us anyways. And very little change throughout up until that final episode. So you could just watch just the final episode with some cliff notes of what the heck happened in the earlier thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, I don't know. But
yeah. So that's Stranger Things season five and a little bit of the whole, our thoughts on the whole series there. So where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
And you can find basically everything I do at thoughtplane.ca or Instagram at thoughtplanemedia. Going to try to be more active on that New Year's resolution. Also, some housekeeping, which I probably should have thrown up top. But if you made it this far, Close Up is going to be going back to a 2-week release schedule, which we tried last year, didn't stick with it. But we're going back to 2 weeks so we can spend more of our free time making other projects for you.
Because we got more podcast stuff.
Yeah, we're working on Head to Head right now. That'll come out at the end of January for public release. It's Patreon exclusive right now, if you're interested. So, till next time.